Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's your read on the role Mrazek will play with this team the rest of the way?
Well, I think you guys are on it, right? Like, he's going to be playing not quite half, but, you know, probably 40% of the rest of the games. Right. And I think they're going to try to make sure Jack gets as much rest as he needs, time off both mentally and physically. Like, I think whatever Campbell needs, that's what Mrazek is there to provide. And, you know, be sharp and in case something happens, injury or otherwise, be a viable alternative. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing that he's getting the start, I guess, tomorrow, and then, man, they're going to split the back-to-backs. I mean, he makes twice as much money as Jack Campbell. He's a good goalie, just when he can stay healthy and get into a rhythm. He just hasn't had that happen this year. So, yeah, I would expect we'd see a lot of him so long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be necessary. I mean, we keep referencing the upcoming schedule, but it's a reality, and the Leafs know it. Like, they're going to be playing a lot of games in a tight window. Yeah. And Jack Campbell, his stats are not what they were earlier in the season. I think he's entitled to a window just like everyone else is. You have ups and downs. You know, he's not as sharp as he was earlier in the year. But I have come to a conclusion with him where I expect him to bounce back and look very good statistically based on the eye test. And what benefits him greatly, and we were laughing about this earlier in the week, is that even with those stats, he's winning every game. He's 5-1-1 or something in his last seven starts with an .889 save percentage. That's pretty good. Like, pretty good goal support.
Tell you, the team's playing pretty well, but I wonder, Noodles could probably answer this. So, like, you're absolutely right. No one for a second is suggesting, you know, Jack Campbell is a problem. But it's been, you know, a few weeks where he's
Two weeks.
And, like, I'm not even talking about he's not a .940 goalie because, like, he's not that.
No.
He was for a couple months, but he's not really that. But it's been a few weeks where he's been around a .900 goaltender. So how long is long enough that, you know, he's allowed a dip, but, you know, at some point, he's got to get it back to a .920 guy. Like, how long, Noodles, is too long before it is a bit of a concern of some kind?
So it won't go – I'm not going to go the Koskinen situation where you had 15 games with him and Smith because that was, you know – but you take a look at – the difference is Joe from the Bridge just ran a board. He's 5-1-1 in those starts. So you're winning games, and when you're winning, it kind of covers up. If they were losing some tight games and, you know, you needed a save here or there, it shines a light on it. What I would say is that he has the luxury. They're going to get Mrazek going. He's going to probably play Monday night, feel good about his game. I think it's more about the process. Like, you're right. I don't think he's a .940 goaltender, but he's not an .88 either. The dust settles, if he's at .920, I don't think anybody will complain.
That's great.
You know, league, exactly. But
if he ends up at a .920, Noodles, that means he will have been .900 for, you know, basically,
for a while.
You know, 3 months.
Right.
I don't know.
It is, because the amount of games that he's involved in, if you have an off night, it doesn't move that much south. But if you have a good night, it doesn't move that much north because he's kind of entrenched there. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I always say, and you guys can concur, if he's stopping, let's say, 92, I pulled that number just randomly. I'm hoping for higher for him. But if he's stopping 92% of the shots, it's when he makes those saves. That's the key that I've watched this year that has been so important, because there have been times where there's been pockets of the game with the Leafs where maybe they've had a lull and three or four big saves by Jack or a timely save and then the team snaps back into it. That's the difference what I look at. If you get .920 goaltending, you know, across the board, I think you're pretty happy, but it's the timely saves I always go back to. And when Jack was on his game, it's that breakaway save at the right time. It's a backdoor play that just settles everything down. You're like, this guy has our back. And in the last couple of weeks, maybe there's been some bad luck. You know, Engvall hits, Spezza's skate. I don't think he could do that again if he tried the other night. Like, you've been some bad luck plays, a little redirect here or there. It is his time for a lull, but I'm not concerned about it big picture. This last thing, I'm getting long-winded. This is the most games he's played in an NHL season at the NHL level, and we're not halfway there. I what is he going to be? Do you want him to be a 60-game starter, or do you want him to be 55? Like, that's where they have to look at this, too. That's right.
I think it'll depend on the race, though, too, right? Like, we had Sheldon on the other day. Sheldon Keefe was on yesterday. And within the conversation of messaging for the playoffs, he basically said, we're messaging more for the race that we're in right now. Like, they feel like they're in somewhat of a playoff race because of the division, and you're trying to keep up with Florida and Tampa and try to keep Boston behind you. So I think that's the calculation, Johnny, is, okay, are we prepping for game one, or are we prepping for hopefully playing at home for game one? Like, what's more important?
They're going to try to serve both needs, right? I mean, I think they're going to try to track down home ice, or maybe first, and Sheldon has been very clear that they're not conceding that to anybody right now. But also with a mind, like, you know, they're not going to play Jack Campbell, you know, 11 of the last 13 games to try to get home ice. Like, I think it's probably more important to get him as right as he can be, regardless of how they finish up. Because, again, Mrazek's supposed to be good. Like, we can acknowledge Jack Campbell's been better, but Mrazek's supposed to give you a guy who you don't need to worry about hiding, or you don't want to play him too much, or where you're going to start him. He's supposed to be beyond all of that, so he's supposed to give you options down the stretch. And I think they'll probably do both, but it does feel like, I know Boston's good and they have tormented Toronto, but it does feel like Boston is not as good as Toronto, Tampa, or Florida. So if you can win the division, you know, pick your poison. But I think I'd rather play Boston than Tampa or Florida, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So Mike, big topic in the dog days of the season, granted, and it may not turn out to be anything, but what do you make of Sheldon Keefe's continued experiment with trying to spread out, you know, the big boys among the top three lines? Today's practice, again, you had Matthews essentially going it alone up there with Bunting and Kasha. Then it's Tavares, Marner, Mikheyev, and then the third line, Willie Nylander's down there alongside Kampf and Kerfoot. Do you like this?
I don't mind experimentation. I don't mind trying different things so that you know what works when you load up the top six. Like, you've seen it now for, you know, 35 games, and it's worked quite well. You know who plays well with each other, who the third guy can be for the first line as well as the second. So I don't mind it. And, like, I would disagree with Sheldon, and, like, I'm not sure how much offense David Kampf can provide. Like, I think he absolutely has been a stud defensively, lockdown guy. But, you know, if you're asking him, like, I've read Sheldon say he's got more to give. He can help Willie and Alex Kerfoot create offense. I don't know if I believe that, but I guess there's no better way to find out than actually have him prove it one way or the other. So, yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, as long as William Nylander, if you're going to call his line the third line, and I guess you'd have to, as long as he's not playing 14 minutes again, like, as long as he gets his 18, 19, 20, like he should, like he deserves to, then, you know, I don't mind the experimentation, different looks that you could go to if you need them.
Well, MJ, you know, sticking with that theme, did it feel like that's how it was the other night? Like, the lines were in the blender, felt like 5 minutes in.
They all played a lot of minutes.
They played a lot. Yep. But you looked up and it was like, okay, Nylander's out there with Matthews and Marner. Like, you know, like he was moving them around. Like, I think we make a lot of it because it's practice and in a perfect world. But, you know, Sheldon's not a guy who just opens the door and pushes out line one to four. Like, he's constantly, you know, adjusting on the fly. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't put as much stock into it, you know, lines in practice the day before a game, because the minute the game starts and he sees that a guy's going, or he gets an offensive zone draw and he wants to load up, the guy's out there. So, you know, Nylander's going to get his 19 minutes and, you know, Marner.
How can he be disappointed with the other night, though? That was one of the most dominant performances they've had all
great.
Year.
They're fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had a spectacular. But I did like Noodle. Like, Noodle makes a good point because, like, you're seeing Austin Matthews take offensive zone draws with Kerfoot and Nylander, and you'd see Kampf sometimes go out and play defensively, and then after a penalty kill, you'd see Nylander, Tavares, and Matthews, like, just random blendering to try to get, you know, opportunistic situations for his offensive guys. So it wasn't quite like, yeah, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, off you go. So, yeah, like, that was probably the conversation he probably had. If William Nylander was going to be disappointed, saying, hang on, it seems like I've got the short end here. I imagine Sheldon could say, listen, you'll get yours, don't you worry. You're going to get plenty of ice time. You're going to play with the big guys. Even though you don't have one of the other big four to play with, you're going to get your ice time with them anyways and your opportunities to create points. And there was a lot of penalties through the first couple periods, so it was hard to get a real read on what the rotation was going to look like. But, yeah, as long as those guys get their ice time, then it should be able to work out.
Looking back on it now, when Paul Maurice announced that he was stepping away, it was a pretty shocking story. I mean, I guess people around the team maybe saw it coming, and based on some conversations he had with management in the summer, maybe it was not premeditated, but a possibility at that point. But now I'm wondering what he saw, what he knew, that the rest of the world is just picking up on, because Lowry's trying to figure it out, but they're losing a lot of games, a lot of games. Hellebuck is not playing as well as he can. He hasn't been awful by any means, but
he's not the problem, but he's not hiding the problem.
He's not
anymore.
Hiding the issues.
Yeah, he hasn't been the solution. He started 13 games in a row, and I don't know if there's a game like, you know, like I say, a goaltender steals a game here or there, and Hellebuck's played a lot. He isn't the problem there. I mean, they are depleted on the back end, but everyone's got an excuse, so it's you've got to find a way. They've lost six in a row, and you know, they
and
still
the division's
have some really
running
good
away
player,
from them too. That's the bigger concern, Noodles, for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, like those California teams have played so many more games, but they're losing, and they're gonna, like, when you look at the numbers and you say, okay, when Edmonton catches Anaheim, they're probably right there with them or close, or with LA. Can Winnipeg catch in Colorado, clearly, but can they catch Nashville, St. Louis, and Minnesota? I don't think they can.
No.
I think those teams are gone.
They're playing for second wild card is what they're playing for.
Right.
And they got to pass Dallas in their own division as well. So it's trouble. I think, you know what's interesting is I wonder, maybe Paul Maurice was onto something. They did different voice, but maybe the team wasn't just as good as he thought they might be. But I wonder if just Paul Maurice had been there so long. He was so entrenched in everything that they did that it's a bigger adjustment to somebody else, even if that somebody else was from the staff, than they imagined. Like, just a different voice, system play, you know, game management, how he interacts with the star players, what he demands of Scheifele and Wheeler. Like, those guys thrived, certainly offensively, under Paul Maurice, and he coached them to do that. I just wonder if it was his absence is being felt more than just a normal coaching change because of how long he was there and because he was such a prominent influence on that team.
Yeah.
So, MJ, speaking of Canadian teams where things have been pretty dire this season, looking up a little bit in Edmonton of late with three straight wins, but in your mind, what can Evander Kane bring to this picture with the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, he's a good player. I mean, like, you know, he's a very good player. He was almost a point-a-game guy last year, scored at almost a 40-goal pace. So he's going to be physical. He's going to be fast. He can play in the top six. He can play in the power play. He'll give you options on the, you know, with Drysdale or McDavid, or if they want to throw Nugent Hopkins, they just give them more options. I've seen him play firsthand with good players. I remember, you know, I watched Evander a lot playing in Winnipeg, where he was effective, right? He scored goals. He did his thing. But he was very much a straight-line guy, not a lot of offensive imagination in his game. He didn't have to. He was just like a powerful guy that could be effective going in straight lines. And I wasn't sure. He saw him play at a World Championship, and he was playing with Getzlaff and Perry, two guys who don't play in straight lines anymore because they're slow and they like to crisscross. And I'm like, I don't know if that's going to work on the same line because, you know, they just, I don't know if they'll mesh. And I was wrong. Like, Evander Kane fit in with those guys really, really well. So I think his kind of north-south game will be fine with the east-west game of Drysdale or McDavid or that kind of creativity. Like, he'll figure it out, and he'll bring a well beyond a $2 million player to their lineup, which I guess is the whole point. That's why they went and signed him.
Well, that's the challenge is you know, he's going to get an opportunity right away. You had injuries to RNH and to Hyman, obviously, who was hurt, and then at COVID. Now they're back. And if you're looking at their roster, it looks a lot different than it did 10 days ago when...
A week ago. Remember that snapshot I sent you guys? I was like, what the hell is this team?
I was looking at it. I had, you know, That's Hockey, you know, Johnny, you and I are on it later, build a board. Like, the team looks so much different now with you add a guy like Kane. If, say, he plays with McDavid and Puljujärvi, then, you know, Hyman, Draisaitl, and Yamamoto, Fogel, RNH, and Cassian. Like, now they can have that kid, Ryan McLeod, who's 21, play on their fourth line with, you know, Derek Ryan and Perlini, or, you know, move short. Like, they're, you know, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, you have a nine that looks more balanced. And, you know, you take two of those guys when RNH and Hyman weren't in there, and it's like, man, you're just, you're piecing together. Like, if anything, Kane adds to the depth of a top six because of his skill set and his unique skill set.
Yeah, 100%. It's just options and bodies and good bodies that would make a lot of sense. And we'll see. I wonder, you know, he's been playing a little bit with the Barracuda, but he's been off. It seems like he had COVID and he went back to Canada and he's been suspended.
Right.
So while he's been skating, like, I don't know. I have no idea how in shape or his timing. Like, I can't imagine if he's, I don't know if he was in, I think he's in Vancouver, like, you know, skating with whoever, UBC or junior team or the Giants or whatever it might be. Like, it might take him a little bit to kind of get up and running. So might have to be patient a little, because he's got to jump right in apparently tomorrow night, right, against Montreal.
Yeah, which, he's playing tomorrow.
Which now, I don't want to kick them while they're down, but maybe Montreal is the right team to go up against, because they're having a tough go of it. And speaking of tough goes, Noodles.
Yes.
Have you dusted off your pads? Have you seen what's happening in Buffalo right now?
I had somebody send me a note. Can you play? I just saw Louie on Twitter, like, tweet something out about the I don't know if you saw this, MJ, on Strombone. He's like, me hearing when the Buffalo Sabres have zero healthy goalies. He's got Tretiak doing drills in the field. So funny.
I love it. Roberto Luongo, get him up there.
Yeah. I you know what's funny is I'm friends with Curtis McElhinney, and I saw C-Mac tweet at them going, I'll give you a couple games, because he just retired. And
right.
I talked to him the other day. He's hanging out in Colorado. He's always in fantastic shape. I that's a guy that I would take a flyer on. The guy played recently, won a cup, and just, you know, didn't hook on. But if you're looking for somebody, like, man, oh, man,
Buffalo's
like, I feel
nothing.
Bad.
They got nobody. They have no goalies.
Nobody, because was it Hauser just got added to COVID, right?
Hauser, and then Dell suspended. Like, Craig Anderson hasn't played in forever, and he's 40 years old. They're like, he's not really ready to go, but do they have to just throw him in because, like, literally they do not have another goaltender available? Like, give me somebody from Canisius College. Something. Somebody has got to strap some. Marty Biron's around that team all the time. Somebody, it'll be fascinating to see what shakes out.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, something's got to give. Like, the games have got to go on. You got to.
Yeah, they're not going to postpone anything. Like,
no. I mean,
figure it out.
You got to figure it out. You got to figure it out. And then you wonder who they're going to face. Like, Anaheim's on the East Coast. Can you imagine Zegras up against, like, a college kid net, the kind of move that he'll try to pull off?
Al's brother. He's got Al's brother in net. And Zegras takes you, you know, takes that, what is it, the lacrosse-style play around that.
Mm-hmm.
MJ, we were talking about that earlier. It's such an unbelievable play at a high rate, like the speed of it. And, you know, as a goaltender, it's tough to defend. Like, I think you are going to see goaltenders now try and come up with maybe a way to combat it if you do see it developing. But it's so hard to see it developing because he does it at such a smooth and fast rate. I do say one thing. If you look at Savard, I think the move defensively is to slash his stick.
Of course.
Correct? Right?
Yeah.
But Savard missed it. He went inside the post instead of coming across the body.
Yeah.
But it's such a, like, I think people, it just surprises people. Like, this guy doing this right now?
How do you prepare for it? No one prepares for that. No one sees that.
So, yeah, and I think, like, the fact that he's picking it up as the goalie is going from his left post to his right post. So he doesn't even really spot his stick kind of sliding underneath it. So he's like, you know, he's just playing it normally. And I think the other part about why it can make sense to do is that, generally speaking, defensive zone coverages are not taught to charge guys behind the net. They kind of hang on the post and wait for him to come up from behind the net, then they go get him. But now this makes him a threat from behind the net, which is, you know, something that defensive zone coverages are not really designed to protect against. So I think just the threat of it might open up more opportunities, because now all of a sudden maybe, you know, Savard's like, you know, I got to go meet him behind the net and not wait out here in front because this is a scoring threat. But my final thought is, like, do you remember when, like, wow, well, maybe like 2007 and 8, when Pavel Datsyuk would occasionally pull the puck through his legs and shoot it, you know, like change the angle, score some goals that way, And we were all like, oh, my God. Like, Merrick Malik's shootout goal. I was like, oh, my God. And now we got Brian Boyle, the oldest of old school guys, growing through his legs in front of the net. Like, I think that's where this Michigan goal is headed. I think Austin Matthews has it go through his mind once a game. Like, enough guys will be able to do it. I'm not going to discount how amazing it is. It's always amazing. But, like, at some point, it's not even that unique anymore because I did a game last night with Carolina. Svechnikov tried it last night. Like, guys try it or it runs their minds all the time. You go to any bantam, peewee practice, and these little kids are ripping it off like it's nobody's business. Like, I think it's going to get as common as, like, shooting the puck through your legs. It's like, oh, yeah, there it is. There's the Michigan again because enough guys and the guys coming up are going to be able to do it that much better and faster that it will no longer be kind of mind-blowing, like super hard and amazing, but not so unique because it'll just happen more often.
Yeah, I think then it will lead to a couple of different conversations. The coach telling the guy either you have the green light or you don't, because that's coming, right? Like the Willie Mays Hayes, nice try, Hayes, don't ever do it again. Because if it's a guy on the fourth, you know, if it's a guy on the fourth line trying, you're like, what the hell do you think you're doing? You can't do it. Don't try to do it. I just want you to cycle the puck and get the hell off the ice.
Yeah,
but the second is how you defend it. I don't think it should be considered a slash if you whack a stick. Like if you got the puck on your tape and you're bringing it up towards
right.
Of course,
like,
you can slash the stick. Absolutely.
But if you break his stick or so, I don't want to see 2 minutes. Like you want to try it. Nice.
What
smack
if you miss
it.
The stick?
Well,
and
that's
grab him right in the midsection.
That's dangerous.
Right?
That it might be 2 minutes. There, I can listen to you on that. But you know what I'm saying? Like someone's going to smack a stick, break it, and then the guy's going to look for a penalty. And I think the response should be: you tried the move. What do you want the guy to do? He's got to be able to defend it.
Wow.
Somehow.
I agree. That's the next step is how to defend that, because they are going to be working on that. It might be a play that only happens, what, you know, 1 in 100, but you guys are going to figure out how to defend that, or if they see it developing, what are you going to do?
Right.
I mean, you know, I played with a guy one time, I'm not going to say his name, but he went to dump the puck in, and he shot it straight up, and he put himself offside. And a guy on our bench was like, "Gee, who gave this guy a jersey?"
I love those
stories about Kelly Chase, and I know who that is. I know who that is.
Do not say the name, please. No. But I mean, the guy went to dump it in, the puck went straight up, and he put himself offside. Like he's not trying that move whatsoever.
No. I'd love to be in the room for the sit down. Can you explain that to me, please? Old school coach, what the hell do you think you're doing? Anyway, all right, Johnny, enjoy the weekend, buddy. We'll do it early next week.
Guys, have a great weekend.
There's Mike Johnson, Absolutely. Our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com.